You are listening to Punk News Podcast, the show where we show what we know, blow by blow by blow by blow by blow, to and fro, to and fro, to and fro, and talk about so-and-so and this and that with plenty of verbal cadence that goes rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat like the drums of Penny. Rewind that if you didn't catch the delivery. Topics we have many, good and plenty, so listen to me because we got Sammy B, Brooklyn Knight, on the show tonight to talk about punk, emo, and title fight. All right, obscure New Jersey post-punk, Sammy B's on that junk, and if you challenge her, you'll wind up in a trunk, you lunk, so you better be peaceful like a monk or you'll get sunk, punk, because we got Hallie B in the place to be. You can hear, but you cannot see the knowledge that she spits and rips and takes a topic and flips it inside out, right? Because she's got insight done right, experience, tall as a kite. Well, maybe she'll be wrong here or there. Psych! Because we also got M. Moore on the floor talking metal and hardcore, the newest of new, the newest of new, the newest of new, the newest of new, alt-pop punk that you haven't heard. Mark my word, you little nerd. Metal so savage it will make milk curl. That's go bad, and that's rad, because here's what's true. Milk is a metaphor for you, the listener, to the white and blue. But this is not a rap, and I'm no MC, and this is not the 50s, and this is not a beatnik poetry. It's just you and me connecting sonically, intelligently. Get with me? We talk the hip, the new, and the classic. At the show, we still mask it, and if you don't believe in science, we will lambast that. Where you're from, into the blue and white and out of the black. Like Neil Young, while others get old. Sucker podcasts that sample and hold. Sucker podcasts that are stuck in the old ways and are trying to land on water. But we go farther. We come to crush. And here comes the gold rush. And we are not stopping because everybody's rocking. And if you're clocking, tonight's the night to podcast, all right. And I'm speaking directly to you on Punk News Podcast, episode 552. Podcast episode 552. We're here with Sam M. Hallie. Sam, what's happening?
What just happened?
You keep saying you don't like beatniks, but your behavior on this podcast would tell me otherwise.
Brain is blown. Like, I don't even know what kind of like genius just like happened in front of me.
Well, Sam's mind is blown with my marvelous art. Is your mind likewise blown by my astoundingly resplendent lyrical ability?
Listen, I have a giant smile on my face. I enjoyed it. I'll leave it at that.
and we're getting mixed opinions on my delivery. What's the tiebreaker?
10 out of 10.
There we go. 10 out of 10. So listen, it's episode 552. We just got basically a regular episode tonight. We've got some mail. So let's get into the mail. First of all, you guys reached a podcast at punknews.org. This is from Tony. Tony says, I really liked all the stories. I think you should do more freeform episodes like this. I think maybe you should have been more rigid with the categories. Also, maybe an episode where you only talk about a specific live show that was meaningful would be a great episode. I am loving the show. From Tony.
So sweet. So cool.
This is from Jillian. Here's what Jillian has to say. The new lineup is really good. It seems like everyone has different opinions and different perspectives, but everyone is respectful. I think John overpowers the conversation sometimes, but he's always done that. Sam always catches me off guard with her perspective. I think Hallie is the most reasonable, and I love M's music picks that I've never heard, and that's from Jillian.
Thanks.
Love it.
This is from Harrox. Now that shows are opening back up, it seems COVID is raising again. Are you worried about shows shutting down? I think maybe shows are starting too soon. Do you think it's safe to go? And that's from Harrox.
I like literally just had a conversation with Frank on Lovable yesterday where I was like, maybe I'm not going to Fest. And I'm so sad about it. I'm so sad. I mean, maybe I will still go. Jury's out. I have to like see what's happening. But now I'm having this like sinking feeling that like maybe it's just not gonna be cool to do the things we thought it'd be fucking cool to do again. So yeah, I don't know. Where are you guys at with going to live shows? And do you have tickets bought? Is there anything you're like not sure you're going to? Or where are y'all at?
I'll go ahead, Sam.
I have tickets to some things, and I think I have to force myself to be ready to be normal again. But, safely. So wear your mask, wash your hands, use Purell, do all those things. See what happens. I don't know. I'll be flying soon, so we'll see. I don't know.
And like, what does flying look like to you? Like, are you going to be in like a face shield? Are you just going to be like masking it up and like, you know what I mean? Like what's flying? What do you think flying is going to look like for you? Are you going to be sanitizing like crazy? Like, I don't even know how I'd behave on a plane right now.
I already bought so many like Clorox wipes. It's not even funny. Like, I literally went to Target today and like grabbed so many like travel size ones just so that I could have it and like every bag, so I have it handy. I'm definitely like, I already have things packed. Like, I have KNN95s like packed. I'm not wearing a face shield. I don't think that's gonna help. But I'm definitely going to mask up, and I'm definitely going to be sanitizing all of the things that I will lay my head on, and me and my husband. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. If I survive my vacation with my husband without getting in a fight, then we're going to be okay.
Vacation fights are the worst. They're just like an extra level of depressing. You're like, really? Now?
We're supposed to be enjoying ourselves, yeah. And we're fighting about sanitizing everything.
John, you guys going to shows? What are we thinking safety-wise here?
I've got a lot on the calendar. I'm going to read through it real quick, so thanks for asking. As I pull up my calendar, here's what I've got on the docket. Let's see here. Catbite on August 6th. Duncan's birthday party on August 7th. Sloppy Seconds on August 15th, Alice Cooper on August 17th, The Room on August 18th, let's see here, then September, let's see, Residence on the 3rd, then Susie Moon on September 9th, Modern English September 15th, Alice Cooper again on September 17th, I got that wrong somewhere, let's see here, Leftover Crack book release show on September 20, and then Punk Rock Bowling at the end of that week. So, man, I mean, I really hope, like, COVID doesn't shut down the Leftover Crack book release show and Punk Rock Bowling. Like, if I got to wear a mask, that's fine. I mean, I'm vaccinated everything. But if that's what they want, that's cool, But, man, I really don't want that to get shut down. I mean, I'm not really worried about so much about me because I've already been vaccinated. And I get that you can still get it even if you've been vaccinated. But, you can't worry about everything in life. You know what I mean? Like, you can't totally turn your life off because there's some risk of something out there. I think people should be smart and, social distance or whatever if that still is the thing, and people should wear masks if that is the thing. Get vaccinated and then let's just get through this because I really want to go do some stuff this late summer and fall, people. So
that's
do it
an
for me.
Amazing schedule. I'm like so jealous of that schedule. That sounds so fun, dude. I feel like I still have to mask it up at things like that where I'm like inside and it's a lot of people, mostly because, right, I come home to an unvaccinated kid. If it was just me in a household with me or like me and another vaccinated adult, I don't think I'd be as worried about it. And hopefully vaccinated people can continue to not be that worried about it, right? Because I want you to go all these shows, and I want everyone to go to these shows. I want everyone to go to your book release show. I want to go to your book release show. So I just hope things don't start looking a lot scarier, you know, over the course of the next weeks and months. Em, do you go to shows a lot?
Well, it depends.
I mean, what a weird question to ask you now, because there's before and after, right? Does anyone go to shows a lot right now? Sorry. Anyhow.
No. The big thing is just getting places, because I am in the middle of nowhere and we only have one car. So it's one of those things, everything has to be very precise. Mm-hmm.
Coordinated.
So, yeah. The schedule down to the wire. So I don't have anything. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I have My Chemical Romance lined up for 2022.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I don't have anything, just because I think the majority of shows I want to go to are in 2022. So there's I want to try to get tickets to the Bikini Kill show at the Danforth in 2022. So I want to try to do that and different things. So I think next year is going to be more of a concert time than this year. I'm also halfway vaccinated, so that's really exciting. So
yay!
In a few weeks, I'm fully vaccinated. So that's cool.
Wait, but how is the rollout out there still in Canada?
It's pretty good. It depends, again, where you live.
Okay.
They had max vaccination centers, and they're winding those down in Ontario because the vaccination rate has plateaued, which is kind of dumb. Don't close those things down because there are people who still need them, but whatever. So if you're in a big city, you have more chances to get vaccinated, And now that they're closing or winding down a lot of max vaccination sites, you have to go through pharmacies and book them. So when I got my first dose, I booked it to into a local pharmacy. So I was guaranteed that I was going to get a vaccine. And then they only open vials on certain days just to make sure it gets used. So it's a timing issue, and it's definitely where you live. Some remote communities, I don't know how well the rollout was going there. But overall, I think pretty decently.
I have two things I want to say. One is that I have only a mild interest in seeing My Chemical Romance just in general, but I have a very high interest in seeing My Chemical Romance with M. Moore.
Oh, I'm dressing up. It's it's a full thing.
Yes. And then if I may go back, I want to say, John Gentile, that I personally, as someone that is in the conversation with you, do not feel that you dominate these conversations, just to say. Just to go back and just say that.
Huh? Wait, what?
didn't one of the letters say that they felt that you sometimes, right? Or did I mishear?
Oh, yeah. They say I overpower the conversation. No, which is true. I do.
That's in the conversation with you, I do not feel that way.
Well, thank you for saying that. But listen, I got to be me, you know, as they say. We live in the me generation. And speaking of the me generation, so Architects of Self-Destruction, Oral History Leftover Crack. I said I wasn't going to plug every week, but I am. I lied.
I'm plug the shit out of it.
I'm going to plug
every
week.
Work so hard on that thing. Plug the shit out of it.
For at least the next – thank you, Allie. I agree. Thank you. At least for the next 6 weeks or so. Next week, Brad Logan might be on. We'll see. Maybe the week after. We'll see about that. It's coming out August 10. Feedback is coming in. People are digging it. One interviewer that listened to the podcast, I think he dug it. I assume he dug it. I think he said, I had to keep putting it back down and coming back to it, which really, I'm like, well, he was kind of freaked out by it, which I was really honored by. Some of the other podcasts that Brad and myself, or just Brad, are going on, the podcast, the people are like this book's really intense, man, or it's really honest, you know. I'm really psyched on that, and it seems like people are digging it. And also, I like I said, the book is very raw, it's very real. It salutes the band, but it also gets a realistic picture of the band. And I guess a lot of music books now are like, rah, 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 this band is the best. And that's not the book. You know, the book is, this band is the best, but they're also the worst, you know. And so so I'm psyched. And I think the book's really cool. You can still pre-order it. But actually, you got to if you want a signed copy or a T-shirt, you got to pre-order a zine. You got to pre-order before August 10, I think. So if you want those things, get them now. Also, if you want to go to the book release show, it's almost sold out. So get, I mean, it's only like a 300 capacity venue, which is very small for Leftover Crack. We're doing something kind of special. There's actually the current lineup is crazy. It's going to blow people's mind who's going to be in the new lineup or not. Not, I mean, the new additions to the lineup are going to blow some people's minds. It's going to be real cool. And we got some special things planned for the gig, and it's going to be real awesome. So if you're in California, the LA area, Long Beach, you should go on out. It's going to be awesome. But during quarantine, like everybody, and during COVID, I've done a lot of self-reflection. And Sam and Hallie, I don't necessarily want you to say John's right or John's wrong. Although if you think I'm totally being an asshole, then do say so, but don't like just agree with me to placate me. So it doesn't escape me that I seem to have more conflict than the average person with other people. Maybe that's not true. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking I never try to screw anybody over, and I always try to be cool with everybody, you know. And it doesn't escape me that I, especially during this past year, I've had some conflict. Nothing super crazy, but conflict. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, well, why is that? You know, is it often a thing in my life is everyone will say, oh, XYZ is the coolest. XYZ is the coolest. You know, they're so cool. I'm like, that person's not cool. That person's an asshole. Why are you all acting like that person's cool? You know? And my question is, do you not realize that person's an asshole? Or do you realize that person's an asshole and you are all acting like they're cool just because you all want to be part of the group? Or is that person not an asshole? I just think they're an asshole. You know? The other aspect is this year, I mean, knock on wood, I did some cool stuff this year. The book, you know, some other cool stuff. And whenever you do cool stuff, man, like backbiters are going to come bite on you and you know, and people are going to try to knock you down, which is true, you know. And I'm thinking, well, anybody that's really accomplished anything, they've got people that they don't like. I, like, there's a Will Rogers quote, I never met a man I didn't like. I meet people I don't like all the time. But, like, I really question anybody says, I don't meet anyone I don't like. Like, if you met Hitler, would you think he's all right? You know what I mean? It's like, I do feel like people are kind of phonier than they used to be, or maybe they were always phony, or maybe I'm just out of step, you know. And so the point being is I'm thinking I've had some conflict this past year. I don't know if is it me or just because I'm doing cool stuff or is it just because people are going crazy due to COVID. I got some friends that got – I mean, actually, I haven't really had any big conflict with my friends, my true friends, you know, my close friends. But some of them are getting kind of goofy. So maybe people went goofy during COVID, you know. I probably shouldn't even say this, but Brad and I did an interview for a podcast, and the actual interview is pretty good because Brad is the interview champ. I mean, Brad is an amazing interviewee. But every question was had a negative spin. And I don't mind a hardball, you know. I don't even mind like multiple hardballs, but it was like four or five hardballs. Then just negative. It's like Leftover Crack got kicked off of every label they were on. Why did these labels keep taking them on? You know, when Hellcat asked them to change the title, why did they just change the title of their album? And one, I got so furious. I'm like, it's because Leftover Crack is a friggin' punk band and they're a real band and they're not some namby-pamby band that just want to be friends and be nice to people and you know, be mediocre and just, like, you know, I don't know, try to get famous. That's not Leftover Crack. Leftover Crack's a real friggin' band, you know, more real than most other bands in your crappy little podcast. And I shouldn't even say that, you know. I mean, I really got mad. I'm like – like, you're saying, why doesn't Leftover Crack just do what people tell them to do? And the answer, because they're a punk band, you jackass. And not only that, punk, they're Leftover Crack. You know, it's like, and like, well, why do they keep getting on different labels? Because they're a freaking awesome band. You know, they're not some mediocre band that sounds like every other band is Leftover Crack. But also, you know, when people do long-term projects, like people let's just say someone writes a book about Gene Simmons. They're like, oh, I'm so happy to be done with this. I never want to hear a Gene Simmons song. Well, Gene Simmons is a bad example because he's an annoying guy. I don't know. Pick somebody that's not like Pee Wee Herman. Say someone wrote a book on Pee Wee Herman. Like, I never want to talk about Pee Wee Herman again. I'm sick of it. I'm so proud of Leftover Crack, and I'm more of a fan of Leftover Crack than the beginning. I mean, certainly I want to strangle every single member of the band, and I still want to strangle every single member of the band. But the band, I mean, like, the shots that we've taken from certain people, you know, it's like, well, you know, how come they didn't, you know, I'm like, this band is so much more real than most punk bands. And I realize Leftover Crack is a mess. That's kind of the point of the book. But they're a punk band, and they do extremely interesting art. And I'm proud of Brad Logan for achieving such great art and still being here. I'm even proud of Sturgeon for achieving. I mean, Sturgeon can be an infuriating guy, and I've definitely wanted to strangle him many times. You know, I would say it's not a coincidence that he gets beat up no less than 8 times in the book. You know, but he's an artistic master. You know, and he makes art that no one else can make. You know, point being is, so I have had conflict. You know, over the past year. And I'm like, well, is it me or is it them? And deep down in my core, I feel it's them, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I don't know if there's any way to reflect on that and really, I thought about it long and hard. You know, I thought about this and that and this and that. And I realized that I can be grating to some people, and I'm not even sure why. I think maybe because I speak a little louder than usual. I think I speak faster. I think maybe because I'm really into things. And I guess I don't always tailor my opinion to make everybody feel good. I don't feel like I'm an asshole, but like, if I don't like that, sometimes I don't like that, you know? And like, when I say I don't like a certain band, like that can cut very deeply to some people, whereas people have tried to hurt me and say, well, the Melvins suck. And I'm like, well, that doesn't hurt my feelings. That just means you have no taste. You know what I mean? It's like you saying the Melvins suck doesn't hurt my feelings at all. I mean, I know the Melvins kick ass, you know? So I don't know if you guys have any tips on how to figure out if it's them or you, honestly, you know, I mean, and maybe you shouldn't get along with a lot of people, but like, I know people that get along with everybody and I don't like those people, you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you put yourself out there a lot, you know, between the website and the podcast and writing your book and doing interviews. It's just, you put yourself out there a lot. And like, I just, as a person that, you know, spent a lot of my life putting myself out there a lot, I also had like a tremendous amount of conflict in almost every project that I worked on. You know, it was just their personalities that I just couldn't gel with, or things that came up that bruised people's feelings that we never got over. You know, I will say that since I, you know, like had a right on the heels of having a baby, the pandemic hit. And so now it's been like a long stretch where I just sort of haven't put myself out there in that way. And like, as an artist, as a public figure is not really like the right word, because that makes it sound like I'm a celebrity, but like, you're doing things in public, you know. Since I've shut down that part of my life, can I tell you how much less conflict I have in my life? Like, so much fucking less conflict, just because you're not, I don't know. It is. It's like you put yourself out there, and that is kind of what in my experience, just kind of what happens when you put yourself out there. There's so many rewards. It's so gratifying. There's so much about it that's worth doing, but you are definitely just putting yourself in the path of more conflict. I think that's the nature of it. And you know, you do state your opinions, and I think that you should, and it's part of why I enjoy talking to you. And like, if you're saying something, like, I know it's how you really feel, and I respect that. I think there are times when you maybe, like, all I can really speak to is the podcast, right? Because I don't really know how you conduct yourself in the rest of your life, which is like so funny, right? That's like our relationship. Like, I've seen you at shows a few times, but mostly I know you through the podcast. But like, you know, you will just put a strong opinion out there. And I think you should. I think that's also kind of why people listen to podcasts. They listen to hear opinions, right? They're not just looking for something that's like, if we all were totally neutral about everything all the time, it wouldn't really be very interesting to listen to, would it? You know,
I do think some podcasts are like buddy podcasts where people listen to feel like they're hanging out with friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think I will say this is maybe getting too specific and not totally addressing like the more general question that you're asking, but I will say I've been meaning to say with regards to the cat bite mishap that happened like a few episodes ago.
Oh.
Like, I feel, and I know that that's not really what you're talking about, but like, I also feel like as your co-hosts, that I like, or I'll speak for myself. Like, I feel like I could have had your back harder on that one, because I feel like I could tell that what you were saying wasn't totally what you meant. And it did sort of seem like you were like accusing Catbite of something that they hadn't done and hadn't happened yet. And like,
they like really freaked them out.
Yeah. And I do feel like as your co-host, like I maybe probably should have said like, John, can you clarify? Like I think you don't mean to be throwing this band under the bus in the way that it sounds like you are. You know, so I think whatever, I've been talking for long enough, but I think you kind of I think you know what the deal is, man. Like, you put yourself out there and you have opinions, and that means that not, you know, you're not gonna get along with everybody.
True.
I think that's okay. I've been talking way too long. Does anyone else have anything they want to say?
I find that people with strong personalities have more conflict with people, and John, you have a very strong personality, and it's not just the loudness of your voice. It's just, you know, you are very opinionated. You know, we cannot get along with everyone, but you know, which is fine. We all have different opinions. But, you know, we just have to be respectful of one another. And I do think that you are very respectful. But, you know, sometimes the internet is not your friend.
That's the problem, the internet.
Well, I've been saying this for a long time. The internet is a really weird place. Maybe that's why we have this podcast. I don't know. It's on the internet.
That is crazy. Like in 1985, you say to someone, you can get any bit of information in the entire world. What do you want to do? You know, I want to tell Britney Spears I hate her new single. You know?
Yeah. Well, it is true. You conduct a lot of your business and your life just by the nature of what you choose to do. Like, you are having a lot of interactions on the internet, and Sam is 100% right. A lot of those interactions just turn to shit. They just do. It's just the nature of the stupid internet, you know?
Yeah. Man. I wonder if the internet will be the downfall of mankind.
It might be.
Like, for real. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know what I've been kind of dreaming of is, like, because, you know, I worry about my son. I worry about him growing up with just, like, the poisonousness of the internet. And I'm having this dream. It's probably totally unrealistic, but I have this dream where, like, this age of the internet, of just the negativity and the obsession with social media, I'm hoping that it just be, like, maybe to his generation, that it's just, like, seems lame. Like, maybe it'll just be the thing that, like, lame old people are concerned about or care about, and maybe they'll find something. I don't know. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe the negative internet comments and all of this thing that we're all embroiled in, like, maybe it'll just seem like dated and shitty to young people or something.
Did you,
you know?
Did you come up with that concept? That's like a really clever concept. Like, what if, like, the kids, it's like ham radio is to us. They're like, the internet, get out of here.
You know? Or like, just,
sorry,
or
I'm
just
gonna go out on a date. I'm not gonna hang out on the internet.
You know? Or just like this style of the internet, just the fevered pitch that the internet has reached. I'm hoping that they just, in order to have any hope in my heart about the world that my son is gonna grow up in, I just have to hope that they turn to something else. You know.
Well,
we shall see.
They have internet, possibly bad. Conflict, good. Architects of Self-Destruction, the World History Leftover Crack Out, August 10th, the Rare Bird Lit. Very good. Let's play a song and come back, and we'll hit the news. Who's got a song here? Let's see here. I look like Sam's got song number two. Hallie, you haven't kicked it off in a while. Why don't you kick it off this week? What do you got?
Okay, so there's this band, The Gories, that were like a punk garage band, like that started like back in the 80s in the Detroit area. And you know, I think most people probably know the singer Mick Collins, because he went on to form the Dirt Bombs. And I think one of the other guys in the Gories also went on to be in Demolition Doll Rods. So they're like later projects were much like more successful. But the Gories were like a cool fucking band, and they're doing just like, from what I can tell, I don't know if they're going to add more shows, but from what I can tell, they're doing like three, and they've done little reunion tours like here and there over the years, but not like that much. And they're playing two shows in New York City and one show in Detroit that I think that people are getting like super, super excited about. And so I am also excited, and I'm hoping I might. I think they're sold out, but I'm trying to figure out a way to weasel my way into one of these like Ridgewood Queens shows that they're playing. So anyhow, yeah, I don't know. This is the Gories with Hey Hey, We're the Gories.
WSXX. This is the Gories from Detroit, hot off the press. It's gonna jump on you, baby, and it's gonna stay in your dress. Here it comes.
Doing Hey Hey, We're the Gories. Here's an episode we should do sometime, sneaking into show stories, because I've got a couple of good ones. So maybe some other podcasts will do that, sneaking into shows. But listen, here's a strong opinion of which I'm famous for, which leads to conflict. Here's a story about a real piece of work. Martin Shkreli, as you all probably know, about 3 years ago, Wu-Tang Clan said, we're going to put out one copy of our new album, Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, and whoever bids the highest gets it. And of course, the highest bidder turned out to be Martin Shkreli, who paid $2 million for what is undoubtedly a mediocre record. And that's not anti-Wu-Tang, mind you. That's anti that Wu-Tang. And so anyway, Martin Shkreli got it, and he went around bragging. People might even forget who Martin Shkreli is. Martin Shkreli is the guy that raised the price of a certain AIDS medication from like $17 a pill to literally like $700 a pill or some like insane amount or something. And so anyways, Shkreli actually did eventually go to jail, but he went to jail for securities fraud, not being a total D-bag. And right now I think he's still in jail. But as part of the federal government seized all or nearly all of his assets, including this $2 million Wu-Tang Clan album. Just recently, the government did sell it to recoup some of the costs of the judgment, or I guess it's a criminal judgment. Yeah, I don't know what you call a criminal judgment. Maybe it's called a criminal judgment. I don't know. I realize there's judgments in criminal cases, but I mean the amount owed, whatever you call that.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you, because they said it was a forfeiture judgment. And I was hoping that you would explain to me exactly what that means, because I don't know what that means.
That's where you're required to pay money to the government for your crimes, like part of your sentence. I don't think it should be you have to go to jail for 5 years and pay $2 million. If you don't have the $2 million, then they seize your assets, and that is applied towards the $2 million.
Got it. But none of that money is going towards like the people that he hurt. It's just like the government's taking that money.
Depends on the statute of what he's convicted of. It depends. Criminal judgments where money is taken can go to victims, depending on the exact nature of the crime. For securities fraud, probably not, but also because, according to Shkreli, now I don't know if this is true or not, but Shkreli said that none of the victims actually lost any money, which might be true here because he was scamming rich people, you know. Mm. But like in a case where a company is criminally reckless with regards to building construction and people get hurt in a building, part of the monetary judgment against that party, that party, that person does go to victims of the crime.
Yeah.
But it depends on what the crime is. So anyways, Shkreli owed a whole bunch of money. The government took it, and they also took the expensive Wu-Tang Clan album. They sold the album to a mysterious unknown party for a mysterious unknown amount. As part of the sale of the record to this third party, confidentiality was a requirement, meaning we currently don't know who owns the Wu-Tang album. And so and the Wu-Tang album, of course, is the most, quote, valuable record of all time or most expensive record of all time, and that it sold for $2 million. The next highest, most valuable album was Beatles' White Album number one as held by Ringo, which went for $700,000 or roughly that amount. After that, it was like Elvis is My Happiness, which only went for like, I think, $70,000. So it like drops real quickly. Wow. It's not really worth $2 million. It's just, that's what Shkreli paid for it, you know? And so we got a couple of questions. The first question is, who bought this record? Some people think it was RZA. I mean, RZA buying it back for the Wu-Tang Clan. And some people think it's just some mysterious rich Russian guy. Like sometimes like really expensive art will sell and they find out who it went to, like some Russian oligarch or some like Persian oil sheik. And like no one ever sees it ever again. It's like just in some guy's house for like ever. You know what I mean? So what's going to happen with this record? And also I got to say poo poo on RZA for selling it to Shkreli to begin with. You know what I mean? Like RZA talks a pretty high game with regards to morality. You know, he's like people must live righteously and so forth. And he sells it to a guy that made money by telling AIDS patients, if you don't pay me, you will die. So poo-poo on RZA for selling to Shkreli. I'll say that too. So anyways, and more. Will we ever see this record again? And what's your opinion on RZA? Great artist or kind of a jerk, but also a great artist?
I'm going to go with kind of a jerk, but also a great artist. And I hope he has it back. Like, I hope the band has it – or not the band, the group has it back. Someone has back who actually – did something with it, because you had to put, like, didn't it take years for them to record it and everything, like all your hard work, and then now that's sullied by, you know, just a giant fucking piece of shit, you know, and you're tied to that person.
If I may interrupt, the album probably isn't really an album. Wu-Tang Clan, as directed by RZA, does dozens and dozens of sessions. So they probably didn't all go in the studio and say, we're going to record an album. RZA probably took scraps and manufactured it from that. And of the few people that have heard a glimpse of parts of it, they said it's not that great.
Oh, that's perfect then. Oh, that's good. Okay. I like that more now. That makes me happy. You spend all that money and it's just like, oh, that's good.
I mean, definitely, I love the intrigue around this record. I mean, I feel like this is very cinematic. Like, I want somebody to make, like, a movie about this record at some point, right? You know, it's like they make the one copy, and then it sells to the guy, and then it ends up being owned by the government, and then sold to a mystery. It's just like, it's almost like you couldn't write it. It's so good. It's like, so, I'm also, like, I don't know. I guess it probably just comes down to bank records, but I was like kind of impressed that the government knew that the record was like worth any, I feel like they could have just gone through his stuff and been like, "Eh, what's this old thing?" And like, it's just like put it on a shelf somewhere. But I guess they probably had bank records that let them know how much it was worth. I was just imagining that maybe just like somebody from like the FBI was like cool enough to be like, I know that this is a super rare, amazing record.
I'm imagining like the FBI like has the like handmade signs, garage sale Saturday, come on out. Yeah. It's like records 25 cents each. He's like, exactly. You know? Thanks, FBI. Can you take 20 cents on this? Well, I guess we'll never know. But frankly, Shkreli's not going to be in jail that much longer, and he's going to get out, and he's going to be fine. And that's the way of the world, and that's a bummer. You know what I mean?
You know what? Like, I'm actually hoping that if RZA did buy it, he bought it back for less than $2 million.
I'm sure, yeah.
Because then they would have made a profit off of Shkreli.
They probably they did, but that means they made a profit off sick people with AIDS. Honestly, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, which is sad.
I would bet a lot of money it didn't sell for more than $2 million because Shkreli was the highest bidder then. And is something like that, well, actually, maybe it would. I mean, honestly, a lot of people got too much money these days. You know, Jeff Bezos is spending like $10 million for like a 30-minute like ride. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe it did go up in value. I don't know, honestly. You're right. You're right, Sam. I don't know, you know.
I don't know. This is all a lot. This is all weird. A person coming from, like, Staten Island and actually, like, literally taking a bus stop in front of Method Man's house for, like, 10 years of my life, like, knowing that he lived there, I'm like, I was like, this is too much. Too much for me.
It was too much for – well, listen, here's something that might be just enough for some people. Aim on the Sniffers, they got a new video. It's the second video from their new album. The video is for the song Security. It's off the album Comfort to Me, out September 10 via ATO, exactly 1 month after the release of Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack, out via Rare Bird Lit. Aim on the Sniffers, a lot of hype on this album, and apparently they've been selling a lot of copies. Hallie Bullitt, what did you think of the second Aim on the Sniffers video?
I have the pre-order in my Bandcamp cart right now. No, this totally sold me. I'm obsessed with this woman. I'm obsessed with her. She's so awesome. And like, you know how, like, I feel like there's this phrase that gets used a lot now that's like, oh, I'm like speaking my truth. But it's like, when I watch their videos, I'm like, she is dancing her truth. It's like so real. Like, I loved this video. I love the song. I think it's super hooky. And yeah, I like, it's just her in a graveyard, just like singing the song and dancing and just being like cray the way she is in the like most perfect way. And just like the dancing is like not pretty dancing, right? It's like, I don't, she's like stomping around, she's like walking like a chicken at some point and like doing all these like weird angular things with her arms. It's like voguing gone wrong. It's like voguing on like hallucinogens or something. Like, she just looks out of her mind and I'm so super into it. I'm going to a wedding in a few weeks and I'm going to steal all these dance moves. How quickly I can clear the dance floor. So yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm really, whatever this band is selling, I'm buying it. I'm like, I'm really into it right now. And I know they're really like gaining popularity and kind of a buzz band now, but I'm just totally on board. Were you guys into this?
Honestly, I've got the same comment I've had last time, is I absolutely adored the first three singles. I thought the album was even better. The first video, I'm like, all right, this sounds cool, but when's it start? When's the actual song start? Where's the hook? What's going to drag me in? This, the sound of the second single is cool. I love her dancing. I think the video is cool. But to me, the song feels Fugazi-ish or in that, like, it gets up to 8 and stays at 8 the whole time. It never erupts and gets to a 10 or 11, you know? And I mean, I'm hoping for a rad album. I love this band. And maybe it'll grow on me. It took three listens for the first album to grow on me. But I just feel as though they might be trying to do the more mature, slightly post-punk thing, which to me almost never works out.
Man, that I'm looking for love. I'm looking for love hook in the chorus. It didn't get you. I was like singing that like by the second chorus. I was like, yeah, so into that. And I love the song. I mean, the song is so, she's like asking, she's like super drunk and asking a bouncer to please let her into the pub. And she swears up and down that she's just looking for love. She's not looking for trouble. It's just like, I don't know. The song, it grabbed me. But isn't that like so interesting that like, just to you, it's like, I get that. It doesn't grab you, you know? It's like, what can you do if a song is just not speaking to you in that way?
Indeed. And more, what'd you think?
I really liked the song. I thought it was really good. And then, okay, you guys know that meme that's like, I think it's a guy from Sunny in Philadelphia, and he's connecting all the little dots with string on his board.
Right, right.
And stuff. Okay. So I kind of did that with this video and Guided by Angels. So, because at the end of the first video, she puts on her coat, she gets into her car, and then she, like, you know, she's dancing and everything with everyone, and then when she's alone, she just kind of like, you know, she has that look. So then it's like, okay, did she go, is this the continuation? Is this where she went in the car? And then I went back and was like, okay, it kind of looks like the same jacket, but I don't know if it's the same time of night, you know? And then it's like, is this like she's playing a character and it's telling a story? Or is this how she feels? Like she has to, you know, be so like outgoing and such a shining light with everyone, and then when she's alone she has to reconnect with herself, and that's what the dancing is. And then is the graveyard like you know, is it a metaphor, like is it for burnout, or is it like just to add to the feeling of loneliness that's kind of in the song, and you know, all this kind of stuff. So kind of I have a lot of notes like that where it's just like one of them is the graveyard to remind herself of the impermanence of life, and I do not think that is right, but I thought it was really cool because it's like I want to see another video because I want to see if it like connects, you know.
Oh my god. Somehow. Okay, I can't yell because my son is sleeping, but M. Moore, you just gave me chills. I fucking love that. I love that. I think that's so cool. And the end of that, you're right, like the end of the Guided by Angels video is like, it's very weird, right? Like it really like turns this very like sharp emotional corner, like right at the very end. And like I love that you saw that as like a, yeah, like almost like a cliffhanger to like the next video. I love that. That blew my mind.
I hope I'm right. I hope that that's real. Sam, what did you think of the song?
Okay. So that dancing is literally me, my best friend at parties. So because we just have no idea what we're doing with our arms, and apparently I don't know how to dance. I was really, so the graveyard scenes, I was like, what is going on here? Because I didn't watch the other videos, but I was like, I was really into just the catchiness of the lyrics. Yeah. But I was really confused because I was like, the lyrics don't match the video. Why? But now, and more, you have like literally enlightened me with all this information. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, if this is like a part of like one giant, like, you know, publicity thingy for like, you know, just this album, then this is genius. It's like one giant art piece, you know, like if we put all of the songs together, are we going to make like one movie, like some kind of like weird disjointed movie? Because I used to hang out in a lot of gallery spaces with like weird guys choking and on videos. It's I don't know, whatever.
Wait, what? Choking? What happened? Galleries with choking?
Yeah, that's I used to be a docent. No. An intern at galleries in Chelsea. And literally, I would sit there all day, like, watching people come in and out and, like, do, like, you know, intern work. And one of the videos that they had in the room that I was in was literally a guy choking for, like, hours and hours. So, like, 7 hours of my day. And yeah. That's my life. I have weird things that happen to me.
Sounds intense. Yeah. Here's something else that's intense. Side one dummy, they're back. If people remember, about 3 years ago, Side One Dummy was like I don't want to say gigantic, but pretty big. They had Jeff Rosenstock, they had AJJ, they had Chris Farron, Gaslight Anthem. And, like, all these very big punkish bands, you know, punkish bands that were breaching into the mainstream. And then all of a sudden, they just completely shut down. And they, quote, restructured, if you will. And it almost appeared as – and they actually sold off all their inventory. And it appeared they had shut down entirely. And then out of the blue, there's a new band from Australia called Semantics, signed to Side One Dummy. I don't know if people like this song or not. Actually, well, I got a small opinion on it, but Side One Dummy's back. What? Like, why? Huh? Wait, huh? Sam, you and I have discussed Side One Dummy and those bands many. I mean, Side One Dummy for you know, circa say 2013 to 2016 was a nonstop mainstay discussion at Punk News, just because Rosenstock, AJJ, yeah. Farron, you know, Are you as confused and surprised by this as I am? It's like what?
No, I'm not confused or surprised, only because they, you know, yes, they did announce a restructuring many, many moons ago. I believe they did keep, like, one person on staff to deal with whatever Side One stuff was happening, because, you know, they probably did have, like, back stock that they still needed to get rid of. And I do think that they were, like, selling off, like, records at one point, like, recently. Because, you know, they do sales and stuff like that. So it didn't sound like they were gone for good, because I think if they wanted to be gone for good, they would have said, we're done. You know? I don't know why they decide to resurface now, which I do think it's interesting because, we're kind of like still in a pandemic and, you know, I don't know if bands in Australia, they're touring yet or any of that, right? But okay, well, if they want to come back, that's completely fine, because, you know, I was a person that would buy a lot of things from Side One Dummy because they had Gaslight Anthem. I was really into Gaslight Anthem once. So, yeah, I'm not as surprised as you are, but yes, Hopefully they pick up more bands. Hopefully that, you know, they'll find some cool new things and maybe start siphoning some of more, like, more of my money to them. I'm okay with that.
Well, I remember when they were, like, doing all that stuff at Frozen Stock and Pup, and that I was like, wait, Side One Dummy still a thing? Because I feel like, right, this is like the second time that they've totally, like, sort of come out of the woodwork, right? Because I feel like I knew that band from what? Like, from, like, the early 2000s, right? Hadn't they been around since that long?
Gaslight,
Yeah, Gaslight's been around, and, you know, when they signed to Side One, I was kind of like, what's going on here? And, you know, that was around the time that Side One was acquiring a lot of big name bands that we would say is bigger now, you know, yeah. Like, you know, the Pup, you know, they've all moved on to other labels. Gaslight doesn't really, they're done, but like, you know, like, you know, Rosenstock's on another label now and stuff like that. So, I do think at some point, like, you know, when you're not a major label, you do at some point stop. 'Cause, you know, for whatever reasons, money or, you know, just no talent or whatever, right? I was like, they do stop at some point and then they might pick back up, but they have not officially said, I'm done. So I didn't think that they were going to go anywhere. I think they'll be back. Isn't Billy Joe, like, back? Like, isn't he involved in Side One?
I don't think so. Is he?
No. Someone's.
There's a guy called. Oh, I know. There's a guy called Bill Armstrong. Oh, that's not Billy Joe Armstrong. Okay, okay. Bill Armstrong. Side One Dummy's two guys, Joe Sib and Bill Armstrong, or they were. I don't know about now. And if you want to read a funny story about Joe Sib, Architects of Self Destruction, Oral History Left Over Crack, read the F minus chapter. Out August 10th.
Plug, plug, plug.
And more, Side One Dummy. Are you like, yeah, I love Side One Dummy.
Actually, so they were one of the first kind of labels that I got really into, because I was really into Pup, and then I was just like, ooh, all this kind of stuff, this is exciting, and then they shut down, like, kind of within, I think, a year or two of me being aware of them. So this is kind of cool, because Semantics, they are influenced by Pup. And I think it's cool because it's kind of come full circle almost in that way, where it's like Side One Dummy was a launching ground for a band that has now influenced other bands that are now on the same label, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I like that. It makes me happy. So I'm glad they're back. I think there's a lot of artists making music that caters to the sound that they had before too. So I think that's really cool. And I really liked the Semantic song. I thought it was really cool. And then
I liked it too.
Yeah, the screaming in it was just great. So.
Well, they have a people side one dummy. They're back for revenge. Here's somebody that's not coming back for revenge, and this is just going to be pure speculation because no one has any facts whatsoever. So let's purely speculate. Gorilla Biscuits was one of the main draws to punk rock bowling. Not for me because I think they're boring, but a lot of people were very psyched about Gorilla Biscuits. I was more excited about this. Devo and Circle Jerks and Leftover Crack, who coincidentally have a book coming out on August 10th. I didn't really care. But kind of weirdly, about 60 days before Punk Rock Bowling, Gorilla Biscuits are no longer playing Punk Rock Bowling, and Youth of Today is taking their place, which isn't that odd. I mean, those bands have shared many members. But Punk Rock Bowling issued, I guess, somewhat of a opaque statement. Well, today we have some bad news and great news. Due to an irresolvable situation, Gorilla Biscuits has just informed us they will no longer be playing Punk Rock Bowling. And so blah, 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 Youth of Today is playing instead. And so, A, I'm like, irresolvable situation? It sounds like they're fighting about something. But also, I found it interesting that Punk Rock Bowling said, Gorilla Biscuits told us, not we told Gorilla Biscuits. You know what I mean? It seemed as though there was two, in the gossiposphere, there was three main guesses. And these are all guesses, and no one knows that, as far as I know. The first guess was the members refused to vaccinate, and so Punk Rock Bowling won't allow that. The second guess was Quicksand is reuniting and going on tour, and those dates overlap with Gorilla Biscuits. That's why Gorilla Biscuits is also not playing Fest. The third was, and probably the least substantial, was Gorilla Biscuits hates playing shows with barricades, so they won't play Punk Rock Bowling, which I wouldn't bet on that one. If I had to guess, and I will guess, I would say the Quicksand thing. But it does seem weird. Quicksand is a big band, I guess, but they're not bigger than Gorilla Biscuits, you know. And so I find it hard to believe that, like, the members in both bands will be like, screw you, Punk Rock Bowling. We're not coming. We're doing Quicksand instead. Like, I don't think that would happen, especially when they were one of the main acts to play Punk Rock Bowling, which I have to assume is at least pretty good money and certainly is good PR. If you're a headliner of Punk Rock Bowling, most of the bands, you know, no one's questioning the Descendants, no one questioning Circle Jerks, no one's questioning Devo. But if you're up there, it kind of is some of a mark of this is a band that people should care about. You know, Halle Bullet perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that also, I just don't see that as I don't see them pulling out because of a Quicksand tour. That doesn't seem likely to me. I don't know. I mean, I know people were super excited to see them. I feel bad for the people that are disappointed. I think Youth of Today will be fun to watch. It's like, these bands don't like run deep enough in my blood for me to be like, it doesn't really matter that much to me. I do think it's funny how, John, do you remember, like, because I do a very mediocre job of posting like the podcast stuff on social media, do you remember that I said that NoFX had been X'd from Punk Rock Bowling? And do you remember they like commented back and were like, actually it was totally their choice and we didn't, they do seem like overly concerned with like needing people to know that they didn't kick people off the lineup. Maybe because flipping back to our earlier conversation, just because of how toxic the internet can be, and they just don't want the like hate coming at them if people are like perceive that they are responsible for these bands not playing. But like they do seem to be sort of like taking it super seriously. They're like, we just want you to know it wasn't because of us, you know?
Well, first of all, I will add that there will be no self-negging on this podcast. If anything, we are overly cocky on this podcast, not overly pure. But I do remember that quite well. And honestly, Hallie does an excellent job of social media posting. M does an excellent job of posting on the website. Sam does an excellent job of organizing things. And I do a very excellent job of mixing the podcast. So we all do excellent jobs here. I won't hear otherwise from anybody. I remember that quite well. And honestly, Hallie took shrapnel because I said they got X from Punk Rock Bowling. Actually, now that I think about it, I was technically right in that NoFX did get X from Punk Rock Bowling. I didn't say that Punk Rock Bowling X them, society X them, if you will, you know. But yeah. But I can understand how Punk Rock Bowling didn't want to be painted as the bad guys that kicked NoFX off. I can understand that. But yeah. Also, the Punk Rock Bowling is extremely cautious or conscious of their image. And I've said this before in the public, that's kind of why Punk News kind of stopped sponsoring them, is because they were kind of telling us how they want articles to look, which we don't do, you know. Yeah. And so we were like, eh, you know, let's just part as friends. And we parted as semi-hostile friends. But listen, I'm going this year. I like Punk Rock Bowling. But Punk Rock Bowling is extremely image conscious. So anything that they post is posted very carefully. What's means that, like, if someone's a sloppy writer, you can't always get meaning from the writing. But Punk Rock Bowling doesn't post things sloppily, so it's written that way for a reason. And I don't want to get too conspiracy theory. Who knows, you know? But that being said, they did say Gorilla Biscuits told us they weren't going to be there, not vice versa, you know?
Yeah, I want to know what the unresolvable – yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's such a weird phrase, irresolvable situation. Like, usually they'll say scheduling conflict, unforeseen circumstances, you know, irresolvable situation. You know, it sounds like they're arguing, right? You know what
I
mean?
It does sound like they're arguing, yeah.
And what do you think they're arguing about? The barricade?
I think the barricade and something to do with the mascot. No, it does sound like something's going on, but they share members, right? Like, you're still going to see, like, half the band.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure. Right? I was actually wrong because I put that, I think, Walter Schreffels was in both bands, but he's not in this version of Youth of Today. So it's like, look, like you know, Craig Sitar, he's listed as the main guy, but he's like the fill-in guy on Youth of Today, I think. Ray Capo and Porcel are, like, main Youth of Today guys. And I think Porcel was in Gorilla Biscuits, but he's not in Gorilla Biscuits now. So I don't know. Maybe this is I was thinking it was like, it's basically, you know, Descendants and all. Maybe it was that kind of a swap. But maybe it's like a revenge booking. Fine, you want to be with us? We'll go with the band that isn't you. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's a weird thing. Sam Barrett, as a New Yorker, do you care or do you not care?
No, this did surface, like, in conversations I've had with friends because, you know, we're really into things, and I've seen Gorilla Biscuits before, and they're freaking fantastic. The conversations I've had was really like, what is going on, exactly what we're having right now. And I'm looking at the quicksand dates, and the quicksand dates literally start after this, so it's plausible that they could definitely play Punk Rock Bowling. Like, that it wasn't like a scheduling conflict, nor is it what is those things called, radius clause, there you go, because they're not even playing, like, Quicksand's not even playing, like, anywhere near, you know, Las Vegas. You know, I do probably think that the wording does sound like there is maybe band issues. Who knows?
Well, I mean, what should they be fighting? I was thinking maybe it is like that, and I don't know that it is Vax. I'm thinking, you know, Capo and Porcel are like super religious, and so maybe they're not into it. But they're playing Punk Rock Bowling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. No. Like I'm not sure what it is. I also maybe thought that maybe someone might be sick because, you know, that's the only time that you would potentially, or like, you know, at risk to catching COVID, like, that's possible, like, another possible thing, because, you know, this is kind of sudden, like, this was posted like a couple of days ago, and, you know, right now we're kind of in the midst of possibly maybe talks about a lockdown again because of this variant. So it could be a whole bunch of things, you know, or maybe, not to throw another conspiracy out there, maybe they are playing Punk Rock Bowling, but a secret set somewhere. I don't know.
That'd be like a weird thing to do. That, like, oh, we're not playing, but we are. Like, I'd be pretty pissed off if I bought tickets to go, and they didn't play the main thing, but play the secret show that I didn't go to.
Well, you know? Here's the thing. I was like, if you're into Youth of Today and a Gorilla Biscuit and you are going to Punk Rock Bowling, wouldn't that be like Christmas?
Well, the world may never know, just like the new Martin Shkreli record. Sam, tell us something we do know about. Tell us about Super Bloom.
Oh, yeah. So this is a band from Brooklyn, and I think they're pretty cool. So they just released a new album, and I've been listening to it kind of nonstop. Hold on. What is the album called? Pollen. There you go. So this is Hey Old Man.
And that was Super Bloom. We're running a little long, so we're going to smoke shoot through some stories relatively quickly. Sam, tell us about I Like Allie.
Yeah, So I like Ellie. They are from Italy. So they just recently put out a track with guest vocals by Laura Stevenson. I really dig this album. It's actually the title track from an upcoming full length that is coming out on Paper and Plastic and a whole bunch of other labels across this world. Yeah, I think it's really good. I think that it is a little different than the stuff that they last put out, because they did put out a record before this. It's a little bit more like, you know, let's just say like guitar noisy, which I really do dig. So yeah, check it out.
Well, there you have it. M, tell us about Illuminati Hotties.
Oh yeah, so they released UVVP, and it features Buck Meek of Big Thief. So it's like, it's super surfy, and it has a beach vibe to it, and there's a lyric video that's very beachy, and it's very, very summery, and like I was listening to it, and I was like, ooh, nice and relaxed and stuff, and then Buck Meek does a spoken word kind of portion of it, and like good voice, good everything, ruined the song for me. Just I couldn't get back into it, but yeah, so they'll be it'll be interesting to hear the album that Illuminati Hotties puts out, because it sounds like it's going to be a mix of a bunch of stuff.
Hallie Bullitt, any perspectives? I stopped on the word perspective. I sound like I'm trying to be like, I don't know, like Dr. Phil or something, or Dr. Oz. Did you enjoy either I Like Ally or Illuminati Hotties? Do you have anything to say about those tracks? And why am I so full of myself? How did it make you feel?
The I Like Ally thing I couldn't get into. I just, if the vocals sounded really off pitch to me, I just, like, my ear can't do that. And then just as a singer that's been asked to add backups to a song when the main vocal is off pitch, I know how painful that can be. So then I just kept thinking about Laura's experience of like having to add backups to this song, and I kept thinking about how hard that would be. But I don't know, that could just be like my ear being over picky, but it was like, it was enough of a big deal to me that I actually couldn't even get through the whole song. And then the Illuminati Hotties song, I liked it. I felt like, Em, were they going for like a karaoke video? Right? Like the beachy scene was like kind of like you would see right in the back of like a karaoke video, and they had like the karaoke style of like the lyrics on the screen. I didn't like it as much as I liked the first two singles, but like I'm with you in that it sounds different, and so I am really excited about this album just to see what other kind of directions they're gonna go in.
Well, there you have it. Here's a band that is always going in unusual directions. The Melvins, they have announced an acoustic album, but not only is it an acoustic album, it is a quadruple acoustic album. It is four full LPs of acoustic tracks. But not only that, it's the Melvins doing mostly older songs from their back discography from the beginning through now, but also some other covers, such as Rolling Stones covers, Red Cross covers, Alice Cooper covers, and so forth. The cool thing about the Melvins is they will always catch you off guard. They never fail to catch you off guard. I did not expect a quadruple LP acoustic of songs they've already recorded. That's a lot of music. I don't want to say that I was not let down. I wasn't mega psyched on it, because it's like honestly, I want to hear the Melvins electric. If they were going to do a quadruple LP, I'd like to hear like just something totally whacked out. Like they've got that double LP. Not the Bloated Pope, Pigs of the Roman Empire, which is an amazing double, really long double album. This is, it's a lot to take in. That being said, it's cool that the Melvins are just doing, we're going to do an acoustic album of, you know, our old songs. It's like this massive, massive, massive bloated release. Sam, Em, and Hallie, do you think, and I'm pretty hip to the, I'm part of the Melvins, message board, so I kind of know what the hardcore Melvins fans are into. Do you guys think the hardcore Melvins fans love this, hated this, or were meh? I will add that during COVID and before, the Melvins have been doing a lot of covers. But they've been putting out a bunch of 10-inches, and usually it's like two new tracks and two covers or two old re-recordings, which is cool because the Melvins are constantly messing around with format and expectation, which I really did dig those 10-inches and those things. This is a new beast entirely. Do you guys think that the Melvins fans were into this or not? And also, would you like one of your favorite bands to do a quadruple acoustic EP, LP rather?
I cannot. Someone else guess. I have no idea how Melvins fans feel about this.
I don't know what Melvins fans feel about this. And if Melvins fans is normally John G, then maybe more the better. I don't know. I do know that Sam would not probably prefer a 4LP acoustic album of any of her favorite bands, including the Bouncing Souls, because I'm a little over guys in guitars right now. During the pandemic, I just wished, like, every single time I was sitting there on my couch watching a live stream for crunchy guitars. So I really want to see a show soon, please, guys. Let it happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of that right now.
The Melvins fans are ecstatic over this. They are way more psyched for this than the last three or four years of Melvins releases, which really did surprise me. Particularly since the last Melvins album, Melvins 1983, Working With God, was, if you ask me, one of the best records ever. But they were psyched for this.
That's cool. I mean, yeah, I felt like it could go either way. But, I mean, it's, I don't know. I feel like if a band you really love, I don't know, wants to, like, do anything kind of experimental like that, if you're, like, a true fan, you're like, yeah, sure, I'll go there with you. Like, let's see what this is like. This could be cool.
Well, that is the funnest part. Like, the Melvins don't put out bullshit records, and, like, whatever they do, it's always it's never just here's a Melvins record. It's always interesting. Even when they do noise records, it's interesting. So I'm excited. Had I written the album, I might have done it different, but that's why the Melvins are great. They don't always give you exactly what you want, which really is the mark of a great artist. Let's do someone else that isn't getting what he wants. And then we will shut this one down. We talked about. I got a short story to add on to this. Not to drag this episode out. John Schaefer is the main Iced Earth guy. He was part of the Capitol riots and may very well have been the first guy that stormed into the Capitol building in an effort to block the counting of the Electoral College votes. He has pled guilty and has awaiting sentencing for a 3.5 to 4.5 year sentence. He's also turning informant. As he had a pre-sentencing hearing recently, and apparently what happened in that hearing is at an earlier hearing, his attorney mentioned that he was suffering in prison while he was in prison. He's out on release now, but while he was in prison, he was suffering in prison because he was getting threats from the prisoners and also had feces thrown at him, and that's why they transferred him from one prison to another one in Washington, D.C. I did this story because it's a weird story. The reason I actually posted it is the commenters actually did surprise me. I thought all the and let me point out that I am extremely against John Schaefer. His opinion and what he did, I think that's treason. But I thought all the commenters would be like, you know, that's great. You know, I'm glad he's getting hit with shit. But I was thinking is, in punk rock, we always say, you know, we need to educate prisoners. We need to treat them with dignity. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have the guy you don't like getting beat up in prison and then also say we need to treat prisoners with dignity or whatever. You know what I mean? Or educate prisoners or have sympathy for prisoners, which I've got a lot of thoughts on that. Maybe we can discuss that in a different podcast or something. But that being said, the commenters really did surprise me. Is the vast majority of them said, well, it's not cool that this is happening to them, although some of them did say it was cool. And also a couple of them said it's not cool that's happening to them, actually have admitted to being kind of kooks in that general realm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but seriously, who doesn't want to throw feces at him? Right? Because he was like part of, I mean, just think about it. Think about who's in a prison. It's like the black and brown people would be completely like loathing him because he was, you know, part of a riot that was fueled by unapologetic racism. And then anyone that was sort of sympathetic to that cause would also be angry at him because he's like turned informant. So it's like, who doesn't want to throw feces at this guy? You know, like it's not, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't have an opinion about whether it should or should not be happening, but it's like definitely not surprising. Right. And, you know, and I hear you, John, about like we should rehabilitate people in prison. Absolutely. But this is just like this. We are right on the heels of all of this guy's transgression. So it's like, you know, if he was still, you know, if he was. Yes, certainly. Let's like try to make him a better person. But like, I think he can have a little shit thrown at him beforehand. You know. You know what I'm saying?
Here's my related story. So this past Saturday, I went and saw Tim Ripper Owens. Who's Tim Ripper Owens? He's not the second singer for Judas Priest, but the second main singer for Judas Priest, who joined the band after Rob Halford quit the band. He's a little bit of an angry guy, and perhaps understandably so, because when Halford decided he wanted to rejoin Judas Priest, they basically fired him. Like, thanks for keeping the seat warm, get out, you know. So I can understand how he can be a little bitter about that. However, he actually was the singer of Iced Earth after that, you know. And so I was curious. I mean, I went to see him just do Judas Priest songs, even though he's not Halford. It was this tiny bar in the middle of nowhere, Delaware, and it was almost like depressing. I'm getting ahead of myself. So I thought it was going to be super depressing. It's this tiny bar in Delaware, and he came out, and it turned out that the promoter like disappeared, and so he didn't even know like if the show was going to go on, and like the bar actually helped him out, and he came out and he did an almost all Judas Priest set, and he was like cracking jokes and like seemed to, I'm like good for Ripper, man. I want Ripper to win. You know, he got a raw deal sort of with Judas Priest, but he knew what he was getting into. Like, if you step in the shoes for Danzig, what do you think is going to happen? You know, eventually Danzig is going to take it back. You know, if you step in the shoes of Halford, eventually Halford is going to take it back. You know, but I'm like, he's playing this tiny bar. There's 30 people here, but he's having fun. He's doing a good job live. You know, I'm rooting for you, Ripper, you know. And then he says, I was in Iced Earth. I've gotten kicked out of every band I was in, but I was in Iced Earth. And then he goes, he's like, I'm very pro-America, which I'm very pro-America too. But coming from some people, that can have a different connotation. And then he did a song called When the Eagle Cries, which is the corniest title ever, by Iced Earth. And it's all about 9/11 and some other things, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm like, what's this dude getting at? You know what I mean? Not that you shouldn't write songs about 9/11. And certainly it was a tragedy and hurt a lot of innocent people. But there's ways to approach that, you know what I mean? And I'm not sure what I was confused, and I couldn't get the vibe of what he was in saying. And in these days, you know, people are always looking for dog whistles, and I think the dog whistle might have been there. But I'm not sure. You know, it was weird. Like, it's kind of annoying that I got to analyze everything like that these days, but it's 2021, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not go and see him again.
Ripper or Iced Earth?
Both.
But do we know if Iced Earth, does Iced Earth still exist? Wasn't it like everybody but the bass player had quit? Right.
Yeah,
like
I think
that?
They all quit.
I will point out that Iced Earth has literally dozens, probably hundreds of songs. Most of them are about like zombies, like looking for orbs and casting spells. But Ripper chose the one about 9/11. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not good.
And more. You love Iced Earth, right?
Oh, yeah. My bedroom's all like their posters.
The funny thing about Iced Earth used to be like the nerd metal band. Like, if you're a nerd and you like reading Lord of the Rings, you will love Iced Earth, you know? And now they're something totally different. Anyways, yeah. Em, speaking of something different, tell us about a band that you like and sadly a person that passed away, because I believe we're going to play a song. And after that, we'll see you next week. You can always visit a podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you soon. But Emmore, tell us about your final tune.
All right. So, what day is it today? Today's Thursday. So, July 26th. Was earlier this week, and the original founding member and original drummer of Slipknot, Joey Jordison, passed away at the age of 46. So Slipknot are a band that are near and dear to my heart and will always be. They were one of the first bands that were truly my own, where it was like I wasn't introduced to them by somebody else. I found them, and I have they're actually a band. I do have a poster up in my room. I bought a Rock Sound or a Kerrang, I don't remember which one it was, and I ripped out the poster and I taped it to the wall, and I remember my mom saw it and she's like, take that down, that's way too menacing to have near where you sleep. And I just so every time I see it, I think of that, and it makes me love it that much more, because they're all, like, I think, in the field, and they have their masks, and that's the original lineup with Joey Jordison before he was fired, and with Paul Gray before he died. So, I'd listened to them a lot going into school and everything, and so I know Slipknot's kind of a divisive band, not everyone loves them, but if you like, this song is just nuts for drums. So this is Eyeless from Slipknot, and this is off their 1999 self-titled album.
Son, 'cause he's a fence, I'm a mystery, and that leaves me nothing. Many times, if you wanted to die, it's too late for me. All you have to do is get rid of me. You can't take California with a mother better die. Can't take California with a mother better die. You can't take California with a mother better die. It's all in your head. It's all in my head. It's all in your head. Give me a choice. Doesn't matter if I give a shit.